Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello, this is Game On and I'm Adam Rosser. In the blue corner, the mammal with a mission, the editor of Family Gamer TV, Andy Robertson. Hello, Andy.
Hello, how's it going?
Not too bad, thank you. And in the red corner, everyone's favourite New York Times best-selling author, TM, James Swallow.
Hello!
Now, Andy, a senior figure at Sony, the worldwide studio boss, Shuhei Yoshida, told an audience at EGX last weekend that the climate is not healthy, that's the quote, for a successor to the company's handheld console, the PlayStation Vita. So the end is in sight. The Vita is an interesting device, but I don't think it's ever really been exploited to its full potential, has it? Except by something like Tearaway, maybe.
Yeah, there's some sort of standout games. I really like the launch game, the Uncharted Golden Compass. Is that right? No, Golden Abyss. I get that one wrong. And Tearaway was really good as well. I think most people who've had a Vita really love it, but there's not enough people who have got a Vita to warrant maybe a second one. I would vote for having another one because I think it's a great platform.
And it seems to have been very successfully marketed to indie developers as a way of getting them into the sort of Sony family by getting them onto the Vita, and then that can be exploded out onto the PlayStation 4 now.
For a while, there's been a really strong line of indie games. And also, something we use it in my family is that the cross-play, so you can essentially play your PlayStation 4 in the bath via your Vita carefully. The back and forth between the PlayStation 4 and the Vita works really well.
So it's been very well handled. It's just simply not been picked up by enough people to make it worthwhile, which is a real shame. James, have you PlayStation Vita'd, or are you simply a console man?
I did have a go at it. I don't own one myself, but I did try a demo of Tearaway, and I was very impressed by the way that they used the backplate, you know, to which you could push into the world. Very sort of clever use of the control system there.
And people who haven't got a Vita but like the idea of Tearaway, of course, can go to the new Tearaway game, which is using the front plate on the PlayStation 4. So they've taken a lot of the ideas, Andy, from the Vita, and they've brought them to the new controller for the PlayStation 4. There's an interesting synergy. Hopefully they'll keep those interesting synergies going through other devices and through other ideas.
Yeah, so Tearaway Unfolded, it sort of is that Tearaway experience, but sort of writ large. And it uses the controller, so you can use the touchpad, but also uses the camera. Sometimes you get something thrown into the controller and you're shaking it and you can hear it inside because it's got a speaker on it, then you toss it back to the screen. So it's a really
nice
back and forth. And it's sort of extending the stuff they did with the sort of the rear touch and the front touch on the Vita. And I'd like to see more of that.
Well, let's move on. If you are the owner of a person under 14, a teenager, a 20-something, or indeed are a grown-up yourself, you'll know that the Toys to Life space, and I think you might have coined that word, Andy, or at least you're the one who says it most often, has exploded. There is Skylanders, Infinities, Amiibo, and the new kid on the block.
Hi.
A giant.
Probably a bad guy.
Attack!
Oh, this is adorable.
Okay, calm down.
Hey, stop zapping me with your little wizard stick.
It's called a staff.
Ha! Looks like somebody just got mugged.
That's terrible.
Why don't we call a truce and you tell me what's going on?
Perhaps that would be the wisest course of action.
Okay, so here's the deal. There's this real bad dude, wears a helmet. He's been tearing rifts between all the LEGO worlds.
Wow. I only understood about half of that, but it sounds pretty bad.
And he's got our friends.
So we must return to our quest to save them. To the gateway!
Still working out the kinks with a remote function.
Andy, that was the trailer from LEGO Dimensions, and I said, you know, they've exploded out. That is a game set that has something for everyone. I get the feeling that the people who are buying Amiibos are sort of people in their late 20s who love the Nintendo stuff and are now collecting the tchotchkes because it changes the way stuff plays. That doesn't feel to me like something that's pitched at kids. Infinities feels like something which is pitched at kids and other people, and we'll talk to Jim about that because he was working on one of those games, but Dimensions. Is Dimensions that crossover, another crossover type thing, is that kind of a breakout title now for this sector? Is there something literally for everyone?
Well, I think something that's happening this year is that these games have actually got toys. So they've been called Toys to Life games for 3 years since Activision launched Skylanders. But really, they weren't toys. They were plastic, static figurines that you'd put on a shelf and would probably be more targeted at an adult collector. But with LEGO, you've got proper LEGO toys, and my kids have spent just as long assembling those LEGO toys as they have playing on the screen. And equally in Skylanders this year, you have proper toy cars. So we're starting to see a better synergy between actual toys that work on the carpet as well as on the screen.
That is an important space, because my daughter every now and then will turn around to me and say, can we get the iPad out? Because she's still there. She's got a couple of them living inside the machine, and when you get them out, they have to have their wash and get fed and then exercised. And she likes that interaction in front of the machine. I suppose that's the thing about the Lego, is that that's always been their thing, hasn't it? They've always been in charge of the front room. Lego just has that ability to control a space, doesn't it, in a weird kind of way?
Yeah, I think that really works, sort of the physical building blocks. But what they're bringing to that, a whole raft of really top-drawer brands. You've got Doctor Who, Back to the Future, Portal, you know, sort of the list goes on. And you've got that, like the Lego Movie, these brands, which you wouldn't expect could get along in the same space. You imagine the red tape would just be insurmountable, but somehow they've had it signed off, and you're sort of driving the Batmobile with Homer Simpson. And so all this sort of mashup is happening at the same time, which... In other feature film type games like Disney Infinity, those things are usually kept separate quite carefully. But Lego Dimensions brings those all together. And just with a starter pack, it means you can play all the brands from the off, which for value, I think, is a big hit.
No, well, it needs to be, because that's a big investment, isn't it, that portal, the actual main device?
Yeah, it's more. So I think the Lego Dimensions starter pack is around £80, as opposed to £45, say £50 for Infinity or... Superchargers, which is the Skylanders game this year.
One of the brands that you mentioned there is Valve, and it's Portal.
I should go, there's something happening that will make you wish you'd stay. There's a party with a real cake. Yes, it's real, a cake I made. Talking and fun, testing and fun, all of this.
Of all of the things that I saw coming to the Dimensions, I was most surprised by that, because you cannot get away from the fact that Portal has an incredibly sardonic way of looking at the world, and it's a parody. That's not pitched to the kids, is it? That's pitched at the people who are playing with the kids, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. My kids, when they're looking through the packs, opening them, or sort of saying which ones are they buy first, Portal and, say, the DC stuff came quite low down, whereas the Simpsons came at the top. Because they haven't played those main games. So it is more aimed at that sort of core gamer, or perhaps the parent, along with things like Doctor Who and Back to the Future. You can sort of revisit those childhood favourites, but in Lego form.
And, of course, you've got Billy the Spaceman. I think that's his name, isn't it, from the movie?
It's not Billy. What was it called? What's he called?
James, help us out here. What was his name?
Oh, from the Lego Movie?
Yeah. Come on, with the broken helmet. Isn't it, what's his name? Oh, for God's sake.
Isn't that awful?
I should have checked that
out. I thought it was like Sammy.
Like that. Well, I think of him as Billy.
It'll come to us.
Exactly. But in my mind, that's what it'll always be. Look, the interesting thing you're talking about there is the synergies, the way
Benny,
these things...
It's Benny.
Thank you very much. Well done. I knew it was a B.
I wasn't Googling. It's just my brain.
Excellent. You all caught up with each other at the end there.
Yes.
These licenses, you know, all the different things that fit together. I mean, Chima is a Lego license. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that is Lego licenses that they can simply bring in. If they'd stuck to simply their own licenses, Benny, Chima, all that other kind of stuff, this would not have the appeal it has, would it, by any stretch of the imagination?
Because it's broadened out, it's on the radar of a much wider audience. And it's harder to dismiss by the sort of the core, more traditional gamer, because it's got these franchises in that either they remember as a childhood film or they remember from other video games. So it's quite clever. And like I said, being able to access those with just a starter pack, that's not something I was expecting. I thought you'd get a few, then you'd have to buy more Lego. There are lots of reasons to buy more Lego, but just accessing those franchises isn't it.
What I found interesting about opening the box that I had, the Chima box, was you got an instruction for how to build the little guy. I can't remember what his name is. And then it said to you, to build the model, go to your dimensions thing and follow the instructions. I was very impressed by that. That's very joined up. That's sort of saying you cannot simply buy this box because you want this character or whatever. Or you could do, but you wouldn't be able to build the little guy, or rather build his little car. So they're driving you towards the portal. They've not decoupled the portal from the experience of playing with this set at all, in any way, have they? They've integrated it completely.
Yeah, there's a nice sort of back and forth. So that's the reason it takes you to the game, because if you want to build it, you have to get the instructions from the game. But equally, when you're playing the game, you have to go back to the portal, what they call the toy pad, because at certain points you need to move your character to different colour-coded bits of the toy pad to trigger different in-game actions. So maybe they need to grow, or they need to shrink, or be a certain colour. And you achieve that by putting them on a certain spot on the physical pad in the living room, And so you've got, again, you've got that back and forth, which means you do need to sit close to the pad. It's got a nice long cable, so you need to negotiate that. But that, I think that's an indicator of the fact it isn't just happening on the screen.
So it's not like they do in the DC Universe games or the Marvel Universe games, where you need a different character who has a different kind of ability to get you into that small space or lift up that big thing. It lives on the portal. So it's been brought out of the game and put sort of onto the physical sort of play space.
Yeah, exactly. So that adds a whole mechanic. Now, but what you're referencing there about particular abilities, that's the driver to buy more Lego figures and more of these packs, because you'll come across sections in the game and it will say, oh, you can't get into this section because it's got ghosts in the way. So you need a Ghostbuster. And to get that Ghostbuster, you're going to have to pay £15 to £25 to do it. And it will pop up a little video to say, look, here's what the Ghostbuster looks like. And I think for parents, it's worth knowing that, because that will then drive a bit of pester power. And it's almost like an in-game ad. There's certainly plenty of value there, but you need to pick and choose which of these characters you're going to be driven to buy.
Mm. We're talking about mixed universes. We're talking about Disney Infinities, as well as talking about Lego Dimensions and you know, Amiibo and all those other fun things that are out there, and Skylanders. The reason for getting James on, not that there is never a good reason to get James on, is the fact that he worked on Disney Infinity's Twilight of the Republic pack. Now, James, you're going to have to sit tight and be very patient for a moment, because we're going to talk about Star Wars as a thing. But before we talk to you, I spoke to Daniel Erickson, the director of Star Wars Uprising, which is the first RPG that officially bridges the gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. That's the new film, so that's film 6 and film 7. When we spoke, he told me about the honour of working within the Star Wars canon, but I asked him about that. I asked him about the C word.
I had worked for years on a project called The Old Republic, which was old extended universe. And one of the things that was very complicated about working in the extended universe for Star Wars is none of it had really been through the filter of making sure it all worked together. The continuity wasn't there. A lot of people over 20 plus years have done a lot of crazy things. And it was a fun space to work in, but it was also a kind of an aggravating space to work in sometimes. What they've done now, when they came out and they announced, hey, we've gotten rid of the old continuity, we're starting over, we're being really tight with it, is all of this sits with Lucasfilm. And Lucasfilm has a core story team that has done an amazing job of coordinating everything. So when we put something out, not only will they say, hey, this book author over here, this comic book author, these other people are working on something similar, let's get you guys together. But hey, here's where we're going later. Here's a space that's comfortable to be in. Here's some stuff you probably don't want to touch. Very rarely we will get the, you can't do that and we can't tell you why because it's super secret. But in general, they're a huge, huge resource for us.
I have heard from people who have worked in the games that they have run up against that phrase, you can't do that and we can't tell you why. It's an odd thing, isn't it? You're working before this big film comes out and you can't cross their paths too much. How much space is there for telling stories within those kinds of restrictions? Is the Star Wars universe big enough for everyone to do interesting things?
Well, the fascinating thing for it is the answer is overwhelmingly yes. It's an enormous galaxy. And because of what you're using, because of how in-depth and put together the galaxy is. So most of what we do in Uprising is inside the Anowet sector. And the Anowet sector we chose, really at the beginning we used to refer to it as the Empire Strikes Back sector, because that's where Hoth is, that's where Cloud City is. And there were definitely at the beginning, some people said, oh, but you're stuck in only the Anowet sector, which only has thousands of planets, right? There is such an unlimited landscape in Star Wars to get in and grow your own space and tell your own stories, that really, unless what you're trying to do is directly deal with somebody else's main characters, it is not complicated. So Princess Leia has a role in our game, and that one took negotiations. There were a lot of discussions about where Leia was when, how we did pieces. We have a really epic speech that she makes that we had to make sure was also going to work for all of the other stakeholders. But for the rest of the stuff, if you're not trying to make a commentary on a particular day that Han Solo had lunch in a particular place, it is not restrictive.
I've met Leland Chi a number of years ago. He seemed like one of those quietly spoken men who wields a big stick. Is he the guy that you've been working with most closely when it comes to the continuity, or is it a member of his team?
So we deal with the whole team. We usually do deal with Leland. Leland has always been kind of the go-to dream piece on there because he's got a really broad view of the universe. So we will often run into something where someone who has, let's say, less control of it and more paranoia about doing something wrong will be worried about how we're using a character, about how we're using an interpretation of something Star Wars. And Leland is usually the person who comes in and says, no, that's fine. Leland is not at all about control. He is about the brand integrity. And since the people who are on this project and doing it are enormous Star Wars fans and pure Star Wars fans, if I'll put it that way, the problem in something, whenever you're doing an IP, is there's kind of two different ways to approach it. There are people who really want to embrace the IP and talk about what's great about it. And then there are people who feel constricted by the IP and are trying to fight against it. And I think those people tend to have a lot of problems with IP stakeholders, no matter how mature they are. If you come into Star Wars and you're like, I want to tell a time travel, sci-fi, robots story about Cylons, but I'm going to kind of disguise it. But that's really what I wish I was doing. You're going to run into a wall and they're going to be really hardcore. If you come in with a really strong understanding of what makes Star Wars tick and you can present it in the language that they know and say, hey, I get it. I get Star Wars. This is what I want to do here. You get nothing but support.
How difficult have the fans been when you've turned around and said, this is the place that we're going to be telling a story in the Star Wars universe? You deal with Lucas because you've got an arrangement there, but the fans are another sort of whole animal, aren't they?
So the fascinating thing about Star Wars fans, because I've been dealing with them for a decade now, is that they just want to make sure you're real. They are not aggressive. They are not protective of their space. There's sort of a testing piece that goes on. I remember going to, you know, fan gatherings, going to big things for sort of outreaches for the players. And, you know, somebody would pop out and be like, okay, so, you know, Wampas eat Tauntauns. What do Tauntauns eat? Right? You better know. You better know what Tauntauns eat. So, like, but once you get past that sort of initial challenge phase, hugely supportive.
Well, how long? How much story are we talking about inside your new game?
So it's an interesting one to talk about. One of the things to remember is that it's an ongoing game. So this is a multi-year project. And one of the things that was important to us to really get that feel is, as far as the actual script goes, it's a single writer project. So this project is being written by Alex Freed, who has done some of the Star Wars novels, done some of the Dark Horse comics. He was the lead writer for The Old Republic. And what we dedicated ourselves to was every time that we did a level of the game, there is a new story level. So the chapter one is what just came out this week. And chapter one takes you through the first 40 levels. And it's somewhere in the upside of 200 pages of script. It's a good fat movie worth of Star Wars script. Plus all of the other things that fill in the game, all of the faction leaders and all of the side quests and all of the other sort of stuff that bulks out what it feels like.
Well, that was Daniel Erickson, the director of Uprising. Now, James, you've been working with Disney in one of the Infinities packs. What one have you been working on?
I was involved with developer Ninja Theory working on Twilight of the Republic, which is based on the Clone Wars era of Star Wars.
Put that in a context. Daniel there was working between film 6 and 7. You're working between, where are you?
Essentially between films 2 and 3.
It is a very odd thing, isn't it, the Star Wars universe? We've lived with it for what, best part of, maybe even 40 years, mightn't it? And yet we know that the films 4, 5 and 6 are canon. We know that films 1, 2 and 3 are canon, blah, 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 blah. This word, canon, what does it actually mean for somebody like you who's working inside the Star Wars universe? How much of a straitjacket is it?
Calling it a straitjacket, I think, is a bit unfair. It's more better to think of it as a set of guidelines, you know, that an opportunity to sort of have a solid basis and a kind of a bank of lore that from and hopefully build on top of as well. You know, in the interview there, you know, the chap was saying about how after all these years of kind of creating new material, it did become a bit unwieldy. And while some people have been a little upset to see some of their favorite bits of backstory sort of like go by the wayside, I think the kind of clearing of the boards in the preparation in the run-up to The Force Awakens and the new movies, I think that's going to be a good thing.
You're quite right. The thing about the Star Wars universe is that we all sort of share it, and it's mediated between us and between LucasArts and Disney and all these different places. And there's this kind of a consensus about how it fits together and what is Star Wars. Now, Andy, I think you're family have been looking at some of the toys in the on the Infinity set in the Star Wars universe, mm-hmm. haven't they?
Yep.
How alive are they to the fact that that character has just said something which isn't quite right for Star Wars? I mean, do they actually sort of ever express that to you? And they say, that didn't sound quite right, or no, it's just like playing with the characters I see in the movies or on the TV shows.
I think they do think like that. They put those things together, and certainly because they had only seen the Clone Wars pretty much from those early films, they hadn't yet shown them episodes 1, 2, and 3. They have seen 4, 5, 6, but a long time ago. So they came in with that sort of mindset. And so for them, they were saying some of the characters didn't look right, but that's because they came in with an expectation from the cartoon. And equally, they were surprised that in some cases you could bring in characters into the game which weren't true to the timeline. So if you have Darth Vader, you could bring him in and play him in the Twilight episodes, which is, I think, quite an interesting decision. And maybe James can shed some light on that, because that must have been, in terms of canon, that's straying, isn't it?
Well, James, so that's obviously something that happens outside of the story episodes inside the game. Is that right?
The idea of bringing in all of the different characters is, I think, one of the decisions that was made by the team at Disney Interactive is they wanted to make sure that if you had a character, no matter what character it was, if it was from that milieu, so if it's a Star Wars character, you know, that you could be able to play it in any Star Wars storyline you had. Having said that, if you have a character that's from a different time period, so for example, if you've got Darth Vader, who is, you know, the classic trilogy era character, and you want to play him in the prequel trilogy, you have to play through the game and find something called a champion coin, which is a hidden sort of collectible, which you can pick up. And once you have picked that up, you can then go back and play with the character of Darth Vader. But those coins are distributed through the game, so you'd have to play through quite a lot as a kind of era-specific character before you could unlock the ability to play as a non-era-specific character. So I think the decision there was made that people, you know, shouldn't be restricted from playing what characters they want to play. But at the same time, it's kind of pressures you in towards an initial playthrough where you play with the correct characters, for want of a better term.
Mm. Now, my daughter couldn't get her head round the whole sort of skill points thing initially, Andy, and was quite resistant to the idea of actually changing what the characters could do. Did you find that, or were yours sort of cheerfully changing skill packs and upping the attacks that they were doing and so on and so forth from the get-go?
I think they played the Marvel game, the Marvel version of Disney Infinity 2.0, quite a bit, and they'd realised if you go to the toy box, you can just essentially set up a whole load of enemies. If you bring them in high in the sky, then click go, they fall to the ground and die, and that means that you can scoop up just tons and tons of experience. They had this sort of way of upping their characters, which I thought was quite inventive, and it's part of that ecosystem that Disney Infinity is kind of hands off and lets kids be creative with how they play it. So for them, they leveled up their characters really quickly, which meant that we needed to up the difficulty of the game, so they actually had a challenge when they were playing through it.
Mm-hmm. Now, James, you also worked on Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels characters as well. I mean, in what capacity?
Essentially, I was the scriptwriter. So when you pick up the toys, the IGPs, as they're referred to, in-game pieces, each one of those obviously has an entire sort of script of character moves and actions and abilities and a whole set of dialogue. And so I had to write all of those lines of dialogue. And of course, that has to kind of cross-connect with all the other characters. So because in Infinity, you have the ability to play two different characters at the same time, there has to be a kind of degree of crosstalk that all of the characters can have with all of the other characters, so they can kind of greet each other and have a kind of little moment when they both appear on the platform together.
That must be a very large amount of work for something which will be over and done within moments. But if you get it wrong, it's going to jar people out of the sort of the pleasure of playing that moment, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to be honest, it's actually, I think, one of the most rewarding things about the game is if, you know, the idea that you get a character, you take it out of the packet and you put it onto the dais for the first time. And there's a line of dialogue that will play only once in the entire game, the very first time you introduce that character to the world, and they will greet you. And then if you put a different character next to them, you know, they will have this little bit of conversation. It feels like those Star Wars characters having that sort of moment together.
That little interchange, what you're talking about, that dialogue, I think does make a big difference. And my kids have actually done that, go through putting on different characters. And when they unlock a new character by collecting those, what I call crossover coins, you had a better name for them, James. What was that?
The champion coins.
Champion coins, it's a much better name. And once they've unlocked them and bring them in, you know, toys to life is the phrase we use around these games. And I think that is true, that there is a sense of these static figures. You know, they don't move, but on the screen they come to life. And then the decisions you take, as we were talking earlier, about how you upgrade them, you know, how you deck them out, are then saved back onto the toy. So then the toy becomes something that they want to keep hold of and is often a conversation between my sons, particularly, oh, no, which character's yours? Okay, this one will be mine. And so, yeah, I think that really works.
Well, there we are. Lovely. Thank you both very much, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to have you on, Andy. Thank you for your time. And Jim, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Great to be
Thanks
here.
Thanks a lot.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.